Chairperson, I think this is a very straightforward question, which I would like the department to respond to. You had ICT challenges. Now that you are back to your health building, Civitas, are you getting jacked up on your ICT? And what measures have you as a department put in place so that you get a clean audit without any opinions in future? Reading through the report, it was stated that you have got rid of communicable diseases. However, those that come are imported. Does that mean that in the past, the Department of Health was working with surrounding countries so as to deal with the issues of malaria, for instance, Swaziland, Mozambique, and which other country, and Lesotho, so as to fight against TB. I see that you had 18 districts that were going to be piloted on primary health care. How far has the department gone as far as those districts? And it was also interesting that the strike and FIFA sort of made short some of the programs and impacted on the Department of Health. But I'm sure people who were getting HIV and TB treatment, if they were not, have you followed up if there was any resistance thereafter? And there's also a concern that people, everybody who is TB positive, is put on antiretroviral. What's the rationale for putting them on antiretroviral? Is it only because they don't want to test, but at the same time they do get antiretroviral? If you can just assist us with that. HCT, what is the take of men in this process? As a department, I know in the provincial department, there's a lot of litigation that are taking place nationally. Are there any of them? Have all the senior managers signed the performance management agreement with them? Have they signed them? Chronic disease register, is it in place? And if it is, that's fine. And then finally, do you work together with DST, particularly around the issues of research that are health related? I am saying this because apparently DST seem to be funding even those surveys that are health related, but funding them because they are research related. Does the Department of Health do anything likewise, particularly around the diseases that are quite a headache in the country? Thank you.
Thank you. I think the next one was the coming this side.
I'm going to use their presentation only to ask questions. I'm not going to refer to the actual book of because I think it's confusing when you do that. In terms of your outcome, I think you are emphasizing that you see outcome 2 in terms of slide 9 as the area in which you are a lead department. But when I look at outcome 7, 8, 11, and 12, therefore, somehow got an impact on the role you might play as a department. You might not have had it in terms of your own program, but somehow they link to your activities, especially because you told us about the Sierra Leone activities, which can really be linked to, I think, outcome 11 can be linked to that. And there are others, which, including sustainable outcome 8, dealing with sustainable human settlements. Maybe you have got to be able to look at that. And if you are doing any other thing there, you can raise the. You can just highlight about the areas of your activity. The issue of the a qualified audit. I'm not going to go deeper into that, but I'm going to say there is a program where you are interacting with provinces, and there might be a reason why only Northwest and Western Cape is successful. I'm linking this with your own expenditure, the grants which you give to provinces and how it is being utilized. And the on page 17, when you talk about improving child health, I am just interested in your interaction with sports and education to deal with the issue of health of children in terms of dealing with issues of sports, in terms of interaction. And the minister spoke a lot about interaction with fast foods. Companies. I don't know how far are you with that. And the issue of PMTCT, whether you have got any interaction with Department of Social Development, because the truth is that you can't talk about improving child health when their parents die and then there's quite a gap. That the information you have, whether you are sharing it with the social development, so that the social development can be ready to be able to see how they look after potential orphans. On page 19, you talk about, everybody talked about the condoms and how big they are. But have you ever, do you have any research about the number of condoms being supplied by private sector? Because it's quite a lot of people. You might think that it's less, but more people might be buying condoms from pharmacists, from other shops, from other places. It's not necessarily what only the government supply. Whether you have got information about that, because then you can have a proper comparison about whether we are they are utilized or not. In terms of the price, because once people buy, you know, then know that these people are going to have sex when they buy condoms from the chemist. So you don't have to do that. That will be more reliable because nobody will buy them to put in water. The issue of treatment, as far as HIV is concerned. Well, for more people to be initiated is a good thing. But as a country, are we going to be able to sustain this increase? Because the danger is that you initiate people and then later stage you are unable to sustain the help which we are giving them. And as far as the community caregivers, most of them start as volunteers, but they have got aspirations to be one day employed by the department. Is there any program to address this particular aspiration in terms of, I mean, we all talk about shortage of health workers. How do we utilize these particular people because they are a captured audience? How do we then, and they have got aspirations, how do we turn them into proper healthcare workers in terms of the training program which we might have? How far are you with the issue of, I mean, when there was a presentation on NHI, we were informed that you are now going to go around the country to get views and opinions of people. How far are you with that particular program? And because I am from the Free State, maybe it will be the last conference you visit, but I haven't had people talking about the department being around the area. Maybe you started in Transcar. But I really want to know how far are we with that situation. And under the problem areas, I'm not linking this to NHI, like the you are saying the following key activities on page 36 did not take place. I think that's what it meant. Did not take place during the reporting period. The accreditation of facilities. Is there a particular program which you follow to, I mean, in terms of your own program? And if you follow that particular program, how come these activities did not take place if there's an adopted program to be able to do the at least the two, establishment of the ombuds office, something else, but the two, accreditation of facilities and external audits of health facilities. If there is a program adopted, then that program should have been followed. If there, you know, it has not been followed, there must be a reason why it was not followed. Be patient with me, Chair. I'm from the Free State. On page 41, Kroonstad is not in Northern Cape, it's in the Free State. I don't want you to be embarrassed later when, because it has been built. And people see it when they drive through the on the N1. So they might see it and then they say, think that they are in the Northern Cape. yeah, unless you are part of the demarcation board. And the issue of under expenditure of transfer for revitalization grant. What steps do you take when provinces don't spend as far as that is concerned? Because I know about one hospital in Kwakwa, which looked very beautiful as a program of revitalization, but it's not how beautiful it looks, it's whether it's able to provide services. And if for any other reason, I heard that it seems as if there is a problem of the tender there, but what type of action is taken? I mean, if you discover, like, you know, it has been, I think the auditor state, the auditor general has stated that the head of department somehow interfered with processes. I don't know, maybe what recommendations have you made to the executive about that? The other point which I wanted to raise is the issue of NHLS. I read a report about, I was not here last week, but in that report from KwaZulu-Natal, where they state that the problem of if cost and efficiency of NHLS compared to utilizing private sector is not right. I don't know whether they clarify that, but from what I read, it seems as if NHLS, in terms of cost and efficiency, is not the best route. Whether you have something to say about that, about that. So that would be the last point for me.
I can cope to be patient. Okay.
But anyway, maybe to start with, you know, even when you do certain good things, when there's so much that is bad that is happening, it tends to just, you know, overcrowd and, you know, overthrow the good that you do. The reason why I'm saying this is we learned last week from the Auditor General that health is not actually doing well as a sector. It's the worst performing. We moved from 30% in 2009-2010 of financial unqualified audit to 20%. So we're actually regressing. We actually, you know, things are getting worse and worse and worse. And what was most discouraging was that out of the whole out of the department, that is, I'm talking about the social development and others, I mean, we contribute 25% of the regular expenditure. I mean, we like take the whole quarter. So it just shows that there's so much work that we need to do in the Department of Health. And when you look at this report that no province, including the national itself, you know, got a financial and qualified audit without findings. Even the two provinces that did, they were finding, you know, with them, and especially the national as well, regressing back now to your qualified and all that. And some of the issues I think they've been alluded to, I won't repeat, the issue of asset management and asset register is still a challenge. And I remember some stage when we met with the department, they said the asset register is in place and updated. That's what was reported. So I think these things, we cannot update 1 month and, you know, leave the other and then update just like that. We need to be consistent. I'm worried with the irregular expenditure and unauthorized expenditure. That is, you know, sort of increasing almost every financial year. Because if you talk to the NSDA, that's supposed to address some of the challenges in the Department of Health, and we have, you know, compared it to the way we spend irregularly and unauthorized, it's a query, it's questionable. I mean, it's like you ask yourself, will we ever get there, you know, or will we ever move a step forward and all that? And the level of policies, you know, I was under the impression that we do have policies, but we've got a problem with implementation. But now with the findings that there's still lack of policies, now it means, like I said before, that things are getting worse. We really need to go back to basics and check where is it that we're going wrong, and, you know, try to rectify. Because I know always you talk of issues of capacity, but you cannot blame it to capacity forever. The people who are there now, they need to, you know, we don't expect the department overnight to miraculously, you know, perform. We expect that with a few, with whatever resources that we have, let's move one step at a time. You know, it's enough, because, I mean, health is life. If we're regressing, it's very negative, but if we move bit by bit forward, it's encouraging, and people will give, you know, more support, work together, and so forth. And then the other one, the other question that I had is about, I'm not sure, you know, some questions probably are for the province, but this one maybe to say the department as a national department needs to look into this, the issue of tenders and all that, you know, the corruption and all that that's involved. We learned that some of the companies, they actually, you find that they're running multiple projects, né? And they cannot cope. They don't have the capacity and the skill. But this person still, you know, they'll have something that they're doing in KwaZulu-Natal, something in Gauteng concurrently. So I think one of the honorable members last week mentioned that we need reference numbers. If somebody's busy somewhere with something, honestly, they cannot take another, you know, type of job. So I'm not sure. The department might need to relook into this, maybe come up with a policy to say, how do we control making sure that the contractors that we employ or contract, I mean, cope with all the jobs. And anyway, you cannot give somebody a job if they didn't finish the first one. Already they are in bad records. But we seem to be, you know, getting that sort of repetition, and we need to be very careful, because this is where the unauthorized, the irregular, and eventually a qualified audit comes in. And also the empowerment, I'm not sure whether to say the empowerment, including the development of project managers or whoever who's the accounting officer at provincial level, because, I mean, we have learned that the employer has the right to discipline contractors. You know, they can effect any penalties. They can withhold money and all that. But when you look at this infrastructure report, most companies were paid, and the next contractor, you know, they were paid without finishing the job. The doubled, because probably, you know, finishing somebody else's job is risky. You know what I mean? So you have to cover yourself, or else start afresh. Definitely, by the time you start afresh 13 years later or something, it becomes very expensive. So the department, I think they need to relook into this. And one member already asked that, I mean, how are we going to retrieve that money from those people and all that? Because we also learned that them being blacklisted takes a long time, it's a process or something. So we need to find ways to either empower these people, either we say BEE comes with a big corporate like your Marie and Robert, and then maybe on conditions that Marie and Robert will give you this tender, but you subcontract these little people, you teach them and all that. Something like that. We need to change our policies at some stage, particularly with health, because people cannot be waiting for infrastructure that doesn't come, you know. And then the other one, the issue of, on this infrastructure issue as well, it was about the department, probably the provincial as well, not attending to site meetings, and the project managers not doing the inspection. So there's so much that went wrong, you know, in all, and the department not paying contractors on time. So I think we need to relook into that. And then under the department itself, the infrastructure. I'm not sure. I know we've got a human resource plan now, but I'm worried that under each program, the issue of filling off critical posts, the process, the length, and all that came up over and over again. I think we need to review the policy in terms of this. I mean, each province is doing its thing. Gauteng, we've got Gauteng Shared Services Center. Bomalang, I don't know what we have. Limpopo, everybody's doing, you know, something their way and all that. Yes, it might be suitable to them, but we need to check the turnaround time, you know, because it's taking too long. And it becomes a vicious cycle because, I mean, you wait 6 months, you employ the person, you know, stays in the post for 3 months, leave, wait another 6 months. So we need to ensure that we have programs and procedures in place that will ensure that we retain our staff as well. And then the other one that was so interesting is the Audit Committee of the National Department of Health. Mr. Humphreys, yeah, I'm not sure whether at times we do this report for the sake of looking good to the department or something, I don't know. In his report, he actually, praised the department, blah, blah, blah. He said the system that they put in place, I'm trying to find my page. Do you know this? That the department interventions were effective and all that. But as you go along and you read Ms. Matuso, the Director General's own report, you know, she actually admitted to some of the things not going well at all, especially when it comes to, he says the system of internal control applied by the National Department of Health over financial affairs and risk management is effective, but requires significant improvement to be efficient and reliable. Okay, I hear, but required. But when you say something is effective, honestly, we shouldn't be here if something was definitely effective. And the Director General herself, actually, but the Director General statement actually, I would say, disagrees or differs with what he's saying, and she actually listed the things that are problematic within the department, just like that. So I'm not sure. The department might need, anyway, to sit down with the Audit Committee, because even the Auditor General commented that the Audit Committee itself was not effective. It was not either sitting or something. Things, my figures are so hermetic. But the Audit Committee itself was not effective, even in its reporting, it was not effective. So I think we need people to be honest, you know. I mean, if something's wrong, even if you're my friend, I have to tell you and do my work and we'll be friends later on. The other one, okay, the general understanding by the department. Chairperson, you also have to be patient, eh? I come from Hong Kong. just wanted to know, with the the Office of Standards that is coming. How far are we in terms of implementation? I know we said something like next year, March 2012. But yeah, how far are we? Because I also checked on your financial statement or something in terms of spending that only 50% was spent on them, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, if you can expand more on that. And also the issue of maternal mortality and child mortality, I don't know if this department has got any alternative to not turn things around, but like I said, one by one, slowly but sure, get there. And the issue of engineers, it was alluded during last week by the Auditor General that finally the department is going to employ an engineer, but we learned today that there's an engineer in the house, and even on the slide to say, engineers are everywhere to check on this, faulty infrastructure, blah, blah, blah. It would be interesting to know what exactly is happening with in terms of the engineering side, because it looked like we've been having this project without any engineers in the past, the way it sounded on the report itself. Thank you.
I think maybe you can. What she's referring to is that the engineer must go to Jablani. That's where he must go, to where he started the 300 million. And it ended up going to close to 600 million. Okay, Mike. Another one, Mike.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for the presentation. All my questions, bar one, is going to revolve around the annual report, but the first question to do with the presentation is on page 9, where you talk about the four major outputs for the NSDA. You talk about increasing life expectancy. Can you just give us what the target is? From what to what by when? Decreasing maternal and child mortality rates. What's the target for this year? To what? Must we decrease maternal mortality rates this year? Combating HIV/AIDS and decreasing the burden of disease from tuberculosis. What's the target there? And then just on the annual report, have you got that? Just stop me if I'm going too fast. I've got a lot of questions. And since everyone else took a lot of time, then I'm actually not feeling too bad about that. Okay, on page 144 of the annual report, to do with the AG's section, if I can just read out section 19 and 20 in the headline. It says, the validity and accuracy of reported performance against indicators could not be confirmed as inadequate supporting source information was provided. Point 19, for 22 out of the 27 selected indicators of Program 2, the validity and accuracy of the reported indicators could not be established as sufficient appropriate audited evidence could not be provided. 22 out of 27, that's over 80%, and then not even close to 90%. And just to refresh members' minds, Program 2 deals with strategic health. Program 2 includes maternal mortality rates, HIV/AIDS, communicable disease, non-communicable TB control and management. There's quite an indictment from the AG says that out of 27 indicators, 22 basically weren't worth the paper they were written on. And then point 20, it says for 9 of the selected 22 indicators for Program 5, again the validity and accuracy of the reported indicators could not be established as sufficient appropriate audited evidence could not be provided. And Program 5 deals with district health services, hospital services and health facility management, that's all to do with the CEOs again, environmental health, health promotion and nutrition, and occupational health services. So, Chair, it then brings into question the actual accuracy of the entire document. If from a few selected indicators, the AG has found that so many of them are actually unusable, let me put it that way. The fact is, what else is inaccurate in this document? So we'd like to know. And given what the AG says, what were the sources of the performance targets for the rest of, for every other program? What were the sources? If you couldn't give the AG accurate information when he or she requested it. the ministers and the DGs comments or overview, there is absolutely no mention of the 90 billion rand private medical schemes industry, which I find that as a huge oversight. I mean, the department has a responsibility to look after this industry, to regulate it, to make sure it's running optimally, and it's not mentioned once here. And I think that's a massive oversight, and it begs the question whether the department actually should be looking after this industry, or whether it should be moved somewhere else, quite frankly. On the page 10 of the minister's comments, he refers to the gene expert technology, which is great, everyone welcomes that. However, it is reliant on the efficient functioning of the NHLS, which other members have raised, and we know that they are facing extreme financial pressures at the moment due to the provinces, well, two provinces are paying, the Free State and the Western Cape, the other seven are behind, and there's also increasing backlogs due to financial constraints. So, I mean, the backlogs are increasing now, which is obviously affecting the quality of service that we're providing. So what is the department doing? And to add on to what everyone else has asked, what are you doing to rectify this particular problem? On page 11, the minister talks about the nursing summit, which was a great initiative, but that's all the whole annual report talks about, is the nursing summit. Is that the only initiative that's taking place with regards to nursing? And I talk, and particularly with the fact that they've made a pledge to improve the quality and the caring of nursing. What else is being done to ensure that, you know, the bedside manners of nurses, for example, are being improved, and that it's not just a one-off summit? Okay, also, there's no talk by the DG or the minister on reference pricing, and it's also silent on the dismal state of finances of the provinces. It doesn't talk about the debt that the provinces have, but anyway. DG talks about hypertension and diabetes, which are non-communicable diseases, which do not form part of the department's 10-point plan, by the way, but fails to mention other critical areas of the 10-point plan in her overview, which I find strange, but it's just a comment, so that's a pity the DG isn't here. Then on page 21, do you have the documents in front of you? Is it? Sorry. Is that right? Okay. The third paragraph, I mean, I find this paragraph quite misleading, to say the least. And just the one sentence, it's about what's spent on medicine between private and public and the reasons for it. And it says, this demonstrates the huge inequalities of the funding gap between the public and private sector. I'd like to know, how does it indicate the funding gap between private and public? And isn't it all about priorities? The money is allocated to. Also, the department is responsible for regulating medicines in the public and the private sector, and it hasn't done so adequately in the private sector. And also, for example, the private sector still has to pay better medicines when the public sector is exempted. And I'd also like to know where the evidence of dropout is that this paragraph refers to. Of private sectors, private patients going to the public sector, from the public sector to pick up the bills. What page am I on now? With regards to, and I haven't written the page down here, so I can't refer you to the actual page. So I do apologize for some of these other notes that I made. Of long-term plans for health sector. I mean, does the department set national norms and standards by which provinces must develop the STPs? Maybe you can find it in the document. And by which standards does the department evaluate these plans? If there aren't any national norms and standards for the STPs, how do you evaluate the plans? And how does this process of each province, which is indicated in the report, that they have produced the STPs, but how does this produce change? And that, you know, and please don't say that the 10-point plan is the gauge in which to do it. That's very vague. You know, it can't be the standard of which the provinces develop the STP plans. Also, for the 18 priority districts plans, what are their benchmarks that they have to meet? It said that all 18, I think all 18 have produced their plans, but the fact is, to what standards must they adhere to? Page 38, the next one. The top line, increase the proportion of mothers and babies reviewed within 6 days postnatal. There we have failed dismally in reaching the 40% which you mentioned. But how are you implementing this particular objective exactly? How is it being implemented? Because it doesn't, you know, because you are failing in reaching the 40%. So what strategies in place to ensure that it actually does get implemented? Page 39, improve access to quality care. That's a top one. For women and children by decreasing the proportion of primary level care facilities with healthcare providers trained in emergency obstetric care and comprehensive emergency obstetric care. Now here, the actual performance is 0% from what I can see because we haven't done the audit. And this is obviously when deaths occur. This is when mothers in particular are at high risk. So what's the strategy around this to get this particular objective implemented? And given the MDG goals and given where we are as a country in achieving the MDG goals. Page 48. Where was the plan? Page 48. There's no action plan, I'll say here. Improved management of communicable diseases. No. Why is there no action plan, as far as that is concerned? What's been done about that? Page 49 and 50, which deals with non-communicable diseases. Despite the minister and the DG both mentioning non-communicable diseases in their foreword, if I can put it that way, there's the dismal performances. What are the reasons for example, diabetes? Not meeting the requirements for the study to be undertaken, and what has been done to ensure that those conditions are being met. It says reasons for variance, the second point on page 49. The study is dependent on the application of the Chronic Disease Management Register, which has thus far failed to meet the requirements to undertake the study. And then underneath that, about oral health services, the target was 40%. Only Gauteng and the Western Cape met or exceeded it. KZN came close. But like Northern Cape had 0% and others had dismal performances. And the reason is that the schools were closed during the World Cup. Well, schools have holidays anyway, and that should have been taken into consideration. And the public sector strike in August, which yes, I agree that would have had some effect. But how can, for example, Gauteng reach 80% and Northern Cape 0% with oral hygiene? That cannot just be the... That's just a cop-out, that reason for variance. On page 50, decrease the turnaround times for blood, alcohol, toxicology, and food specimens, the FCSs. I mean, we've had, Chair, and you'll bear with me, I've written to you about it again, and I hope this isn't the meeting, because we have to bring the FCS units here again. But the DG actually accompanied from the forensic chemistry laboratories in this regard, if you remember to the meeting. It was one of the first meetings she came to after being appointed as DG. And we were given assurance that positions would be filled, that the issue around the Johannesburg laboratory would be sorted out, that they would have next temporary accommodation next door. So the gentleman behind you is trying to pass your notes, so I'll stop talking. Is that right? Okay. That I don't know which building next door to them, the NHLS or some other, I don't know which one, I'm forgetting that. But the fact is that they would move there temporary so that they would still be able to analyze all the blood, the food, and the bodies that they have to do. And obviously that didn't happen. I'd like to know why it didn't happen for Johannesburg specifically, and why the positions weren't filled, but we were given the assurance that they would be filled. Because, you know, for people to wait, I mean, toxicology, I mean, when you admit it here, 5 years, I mean, it's absolute disgrace. You know, it is, which I'm sure you agree with me. I mean, I'm not saying you are proud of this, but, I mean, the fact is that it affects people's lives. When people can't access insurance money because the insurance company won't pay out until they get the toxicology report, many people lose their homes, entire livelihoods. So something has to be done about this. Page 53. Percentage of, okay, you've talked, this is about CV now. Percentage of patients successfully complete, and all the questions I've been asking to are still programmed to you, where the Auditor General says 22 out of 27 of the documents that they looked at couldn't actually be verified. So we don't even know. A lot of these figures could just be thumbsuck. We don't know if they're inflated or deflated, but more likely inflated to make the department effective. So just bear that in mind. The TB control, percentage of patients successfully completing their treatment. Our target is 80%, and as you correctly said, World Health Organization is 85%. Why is our target below the World Health Organization, firstly? I mean, because we should be trying to achieve what the rest of the world is, you know, achieving, or trying to achieve themselves. And then the 74%, I mean, is very low. And so what programs are in place by the department to ensure that we have proper follow-up? Because the costs of, and Dean mentioned, treating XDR and MDR actually shadow the entire rest of the TB budget. I mean, it's so expensive to treat those few people that have, not few, but generally a few hundred or a few thousand that have it. So what is the department doing to ensure that normal TB, that people take their drugs or medication, that they complete the 6 months program in order to get better? I mean, also on page 55, the second one, implement best practice model of collaboration on TB and HIV at PhD level. I mean, there the actual performance is 31%, it should be 70%. You know, and this is a priority. It's part of the 10-point plan. And, you know, for me, if I had a 10-point plan that was a priority, then I would give emphasis to those priorities to make sure that we reach our goals. And getting 31% actual performance out of 70%, I don't feel that it's been given the importance that it should. Similarly, initiate all eligible MDR and XDR patients on ARVs, 69%. And there, that's, for me, that would seem quite a simple task, quite frankly, because the MDR and XDR patients, we're monitoring, we know who they are, and we should know if they are HIV positive, if they need ARVs. So why is there a huge discrepancy there between the 69% and the 100%? Page 59. Now I'm on program 3, so the members know. The annual National Antenatal HIV and Syphilis Prevalence Survey. It was supposed to be published by March 2011. It's conducted in October, just so the members know, right? Which is over. It's a year ago that it was actually conducted. And it still hasn't been released a year later. And I saw I've got a parliamentary reply during lunchtime to do with this, quite frankly, and they said it's going to be released on World AIDS Day on the 1st of December, which is 13 months after the fact. What's the reasons for the continuous delay? And when will the 2011 annual report that's being conducted currently be released? For me, Chair, it should be released as a matter of course to the public not saying it's happening, but the longer you keep a report for a year, the longer it can be doctored to suit certain outcomes. Then, as far as the demographic health survey at the bottom of page 59, we still haven't had it done despite commitment from the department. And here the site as the reason for not conducting it as budgetary constraints. But if it was in the annual report last year, and if it was one of the objectives, surely it must have been budgeted for. And if it wasn't budgeted for, that means it's bad management by the department. So what were the reasons for not having the budget if it was in the annual report? Page 60, the cancer register, I still can't believe we don't have one. Updated from 2000. It's 11 years, going on for 12 years old now. And there's no way the department can actually budget properly and efficiently if we don't have an up-to-date cancer register. I mean, we had CHOC here to do with children with cancer, and we heard, I mean, if it wasn't for them funding many of the hospitals, I don't know where we would be with cancer awards for children in particular. And Chair, this needs to be given serious attention by the committee. We need to get this cancer register up and running. And I'd like to know from the department, can we get a commitment out of them as to when it will happen? Page 61. Again, Commission National, the second point. Commission national, provincial, and district level estimates of burden of disease. And again, it wasn't done because resource constraints, again. But if it's in the annual report and it is a target, surely better planning should have gone into place to ensure that it did happen. What were the reasons for the resource constraints? And what's been done to ensure that it will happen this financial year? Again, the point underneath that, Chair, monitor and oversee the conduct of clinical trials and related activities, resource constraints, again. So same questions apply to this. Then as far as the bottom one, e-enablement, I just want to know whether the department has set minimum standards and specifications that all provinces must adhere to with regards to the e-enablement of healthcare. Now, the provinces can still have their own provincial tenders, but those tenders must have minimum specifications and must meet minimum standards. Has that been achieved? And if not, when will it? Because you can't have provinces all going out to tender having 9 different programs that don't even talk to each other. I'm trying to speed up to page 66. Yeah, I've read my report. It's falling apart. the first point, the establishment of a ministerial advisory committee for quality, and the variant is, it was placed on hold, this establishment, and I'd like to know why that was. Then the third point is conduct an audit of all health establishments to determine if they meet core standards. And actual performance, their self-assessments were conducted. But I mean, self-assessments are activity and futility, quite frankly. If I'm in a health facility and I get asked for self-assessments, I'm going to, make my health facility look a lot better than what it actually is. So what was the point of doing a self-assessment as opposed to sending in independent assessors to determine whether or not health facilities actually met minimum standards? And to do with officer standards compliance, I would like to know whether there were any external reviews or investigations to do with any baby deaths during the year in question. Not internal, but external reviews of baby deaths. I'm getting there, Chair. I've got a few left. Don't worry. Page 67, the adverse event reporting and response system. That's the second measurable objective. Basically, no national adverse event reporting system is in place, and I'd like to know why not. So I think it would be, it's one of the tools to bring accountability into the system. For example, if you have patients reporting maximum office established. That's the indicator. Will be part. Yeah. The National Office Ombudsman. I just want to know where it says, for reason for variance, this office will be part of the future Office of Health Standards Compliance, but that means it's not independent. This is part of the Office of Standards Compliance, which reports directly to the Minister. So how do you see that independence? And then the first point, National Survey to Establish Baseline and Targets Commissioned. That's under targets. And then it says reasons for variance, national survey costs were considered too high. So it wasn't commissioned. So if you could just explain that one, please. Page 71, to do with the health financial planning and economics, the establishment of a national health insurance fund. The variance says the draft policy document at NHI and the establishment of the NHI fund have been approved by Cabinet. But I thought only the green paper was approved, not the draft policy. Could you give clarity on that? Then on page 72, on the development and sustainable revenue model, are you going to scrap the means test for that? And if not, why not? This 74 is quite interesting. Because this is this is about stockouts. So if you look at page 74, every province either has a 0% stockout, 2.2% or 4.4%. And it's impossible that out of the 9 provinces, there's just 3 different figures there. It would have been a bigger variation, I'm sure. And this is where the accuracy of the data given to the Auditor General comes into question, whether or not that can be believed. So I'd just like comments on that, please. And who came up with these figures? If I was doing it, I would have had a bit more imagination and put a different figure down for every province. Review of standard treatment guidelines, what's happening with the single exit price, if we have an update on that, please. I'll nearly finish, don't worry. 77, the CEOs, I don't want to ask you. You and I got tired of asking my own questions, don't you? I want to know with regards to the appointment of the CEOs now that they've had that self-assessment evaluation of this. What has changed with regards to the appointment of CEOs? What in the procedure has changed that will ensure that we have competent CEOs appointed in all hospitals? So if you could briefly commit on that. 83, this is a few questions left. Page 83 to do with the primary health care revised package. What is it and where is it? And can we have a copy of it? 87, I've talked about the districts, so that's fine. And then lastly, Chair, I'm going off the report now, just to do with the nurses' strike. We were told that nurses would be held accountable. Those that striked would not be paid. And I'd like to know how many nurses actually got the pay docked. And that that process, is it complete or are they still paying the money off? And how many were fired? Because quite a few were violent during the campaign, during the strike, I should say. I mean, we've heard about nurses being pulled out of theatre by other nurses, placing people's lives in danger. So I want to know whether any were dismissed for their action during the strike. Thank you for indulging me, Chief.
I think that was the last of the hands that I picked up. In any case, this is... Oh, Zara? Okay. The last one, your turn.
Know this, which provinces and which hospitals And what are the specific reasons for that? The other one, may I know what has contributed to the improvement of TB cure rate, and how will this success build upon? Another question, may the department provide us as a committee with more details about the new TB drug resistant hospitals and their completion dates. I see there is a tendency of delayed payment of suppliers. Is it because there is lack of financial planning, or is it there is no budget made before? Thank you, Chair.
There was one other Matsipe who has left because there's another meeting that she attended. She said she asked you to ask a question. Are there any questions for her? Mr. Van?
What he wanted to know is said that it's outside the report, but what this latest infection of the virus, what is the department doing? I guess the word was daily. Yeah, they can just reassure so that when we get out of here, we know what is happening. That's what he wanted to know.
Okay. The department, over to you to answer those questions. We are in 10 past 3.
We still want to finish by 4.
Not necessarily so.
You can continue a bit
later. The reason I asked that, Chair, is because we have 106 comments and questions. Mm-hmm. The bulk of them are from Honourable Mike Waters. So we'll try to answer them. I'll answer the questions that relate to general issues in the department, that's all the programmatic. Then I'll hand over to the CFO and the Deputy CFO to answer all the questions on the financing. Then all the infrastructure-related questions, Dr. Sharp and the engineer will answer. Issues related to quality, information, monitoring, and epidemiology, and NHI, and related questions, Dr. Mr. will answer. So that's how we will move. So let me start. Firstly, honourable members, thank you very much for the comments and questions. I think it's gratifying to note that the committee has taken into account that there has been progress in a number of areas. I think the progress relates to the issues that relate to the point you made in the beginning of the meeting, Chair. That is that the committee and Parliament gave us 21 billion rands. What have we done? I think we tried to indicate the kind of fairly wide range of activities and some of the outcomes. The question about whether or not the outcomes that we reported to Honourable Waters, whether they are believable or not, I think they are one of the first that we need to respond to, because it relates also to the AG's report and the issues that the AG raised with the committee and with the department. Let me start by saying that after the AG presented his report to Cabinet, the Minister then asked the AG to present that same report in respect of the Department of Health, both national and provinces, to the National Health Council. And this we did last Thursday, clearly because of the concerns raised by the AG and the Minister's concerns with respect to some of the findings of the AG. We'll talk separately about the asset register and the infrastructure issues. Both the CFO and Dr. Sharker will speak to those. I want to speak, though, to the performance audit. Now, the AG's methodology has been a point of significant contestation between the department and the AG's office over numerous meetings, and the AG's office can confirm that. You see, if you take 20 facilities, or 4,000 facilities, it will be difficult to draw a generalizable conclusion. Any statistician, any good statistician will tell you that it's very difficult to draw a conclusive and generalizable conclusion from 20 facilities if you've got 4,000 facilities. Even if you do it scientifically, even if you select those 20 facilities scientifically. So we have had an ongoing contestation with the AG's office about the methodology. So we've agreed with the AG's office that we will have a workshop, and the date is next week, I think, the 26th, to see if we can agree on a methodology. Because we don't disagree with the principle. The principle is not contested, that we need a verifiable flow of information from the patient all the way up to the national department, and then back again. So that's not contested. What's contested is the methodology. So we're having a workshop with the AG's office on the 26th to agree on a methodology for the audit for 2011-12 for next year. And the AG's office, I'm sure the AG's office can speak for themselves, but what they try to do is try to figure out how a number we report nationally. So if I report for TB, for example, a 74% treatment completion rate, how is that reflected at the level of a patient taking 20 facilities? So you can see the difficulty in making a jump from 20 facilities and therefore X number of individuals to thousands of potential patients. Because we have over 400,000 TB cases, right, which whom we found and who are on treatment. So you can see the challenge we have in the methodology of the AG's report. Notwithstanding that, I think it is well accepted that the information system in health is not 100% and not just what we would like it to be. I mean, that I think we've discussed with the committee many times before. But let me just take the TB register, the electronic TB register. I think it might be instructive for the committee, Honorable Chair, because at some point, to actually take one program, let's take the TB register, and show how, from the patient and the patient record and the paper-based patient register, how that is translated into an electronic register, which gives you either the cure rate, the default rate, or the treatment completion rate. Because the data exists. So if you take the TB register, I can see in my office drill down to an individual patient by name, and will be able to show using the electronic TB register when that patient was initiated on treatment and when that patient successfully completed treatment, and if the patient presented for a 6 month sputum and therefore converted and was therefore TB negative at six months, which means it's cured. So with a TB electronic register, we can show it. On HIV, we cannot show that currently because we have a paper-based register. What we have agreed on and what we've adopted and are starting to implement is a three-tier system for the HIV program. The first is a paper-based system, which uses the WHO register. The second is an electronic register, which is very similar to the TB register. And the third tier is a patient information system, which will enable us to follow cohorts of patients. We have assured the minister that by March next year, we will have in each district at least one facility which is implementing tier 2 for the ART program. Every facility should be implementing the paper-based register. So I think what we are trying to suggest is that we recognize some of the challenges on collecting information and collating information all the way through the system. And we have systems in place now that will do that. So. And in the discussion that we had at the National Health Council, I said to the AG that if he chooses the facilities in which we are currently implementing Tier 2 on ARVs, he will be able to see how the number that we report is related to the numbers of patients on treatment at facility level. At the moment, we can absolutely show that for TB, with the electronic TB units. So what we're saying is that there are issues, we are dealing with it, but we are contesting the methodology that the AG's office uses. And it's not news to them, we've been having this discussion for months. So that's the kind of overview I want to kind of suggest on the issues of information. Turning now to some of the specific issues that have been raised by the honourable members, I'm going to go through the issues that I will speak to and then, as I said, hand over. it's not finalized, is this new research that suggests that Depo-Provera, if used especially young women, at the current dosages, can increase the chances of transmission of HIV. So there's some new research that we want to verify before we finalize the policy. We are engaged with the World Health Organization to try and finalize their position on the matter before we put it into our contraception policy. So that's the only outstanding piece, to finalize the contraception policy. We would obviously not like to see many unwanted pregnancies and people turning to termination. But in terms of our constitution, in terms of the act, that must be available. So there's no contestation about availability, but clearly we would like to see contraception, dual protection in place, and available everywhere so that people are covered in the event of not wanting to be pregnant. On the CCG, the cost of CCG and the stipends, and why are the numbers higher than the numbers in the target? During the financial year, through the EPWP program, the Expanded Public Works program, we got some additional funding. So that additional funding was used then to hire additional CCGs at the stipend level. So that's the reason that the number that we had in 2010-11 is higher than the number we budgeted for. But we got some additional money from Public Works, which runs the EPWP program. In terms of the details and the outcomes, the Honourable Member did suggest that we could send that detail through, so we will send that detail through. What we are doing, and this relates to the broader questions about the re-engineering of primary health care, what we have agreed within the Department of Health of all provinces and with the Department of Social Development is that we need to harmonize the community-based workers at the district level across at least health and social development, because there's a fair amount of overlap currently, and you will find that you will find two or three caregivers from different departments going to the same household. So we've agreed to harmonize it across the two departments. In terms of the disaster management plan, there is a disaster management plan that's in place. I'm skipping all of the financial issues. The rest of the questions from the Honourable, I think, was related to the finance. OSD and migration of health nurses from Honourable Dutton is not here now, and the shortages in urban areas. Chair, we recognize that the implementation of the OSD for nurses has resulted in a wide range of unintended consequences. So we have an audit and a survey being done currently to look at it in order to ensure that we mitigate the unintended consequences. So I'm not quite sure of where that process is and when it will be finalized, but we will provide that information as well to the Honourable Committee. On the forensic mortuaries and conditional grants going to provinces, the CFO will respond to that in terms of whether or not there are any risks in the conditional grant going to provinces. But let me say that the conditional grant that we've had for the last 5 years or so has made a big difference in the quality of care we provide to both the deceased and their families. There have been significant improvements in the infrastructure of mortuaries throughout the country. And it's made a big difference. I mean, there obviously are places where we need to still do more, but we've really done, I think, rather well. Monitoring of infrastructure, etc., Dr. Sharpa will respond to. The hospital management program and what can be done to strengthen it. The two programs that we reflect in the annual report, both at the University of KwaZulu-Natal and University of Rajasthan, were donor funded. And when the donor funding ended, those programs also struggled to survive from the university point of view. So we've decided then to hold that in abeyance until we finalize the audit of CEOs. And this relates to what Honorable Mike Waters had asked about, where is the process with the CEOs. That process has culminated in the Gazette that was issued a few weeks ago, which listed down by level of care and type of hospital what level, in terms of salary level, the CEO should be at. So the next step, Honorable Waters, would be to look at a case-by-case basis in each province how a particular CEO stacks up against the qualifications required in the Gazette that was issued. Where there's a match, obviously the person where there isn't a match, either the person will be trained up, or the person will have to be moved to another responsibility to ensure then that we have the right people in the right posts. So that's what's coming up next, or the next steps with respect to hospitals. Strikes, what can be done in terms of preventing violence? I guess a number of things can be done with respect to that. One is the what was referred by one member as the service level agreement with the unions. Honourable member, one of the challenges there is the definition of what is permissible and what is not. You know, what is an essential service and what is not. The department has long held the view, and I think we made this this comment to the committee previously, that as far as we are concerned, everything that happens in a health facility is an essential service. You know, whether you're a dietitian, whether you're a porter, whether you're a mortuary attendant, you're an essential service. Now, of course, organized labor has a different concept. So that created a significant impasse between ourselves and organized labor in the boundary house. Clearly, what we need to do is ensure that we have preventive measures to ensure that strikes don't happen. Luckily, this year, the salary negotiations ended on a positive note, where there has been agreements between the employer and the employee organizations. So, at least for this year, it's mitigated. The registration of drugs, I'll ask Dr. Andrepille to respond to that as well. The Cuban students, how many and how many we have currently? As we say in the annual report, for 2010-2011, we had 80 students. We've had a larger number of students recruited in this financial year, but I don't have the numbers to provide that to the committee separately, together with the number of students that are currently in training. But that was what was also. The Honourable Member from the Northwest raised a number of questions about infrastructure, which Dr. Sharker will respond to. I will respond to the PMCPT issue. I've responded to already. The OSD issue. In terms of implementation of the OSD for those two categories, Honourable Member, that's been done already. It has negotiated and it has been implemented. So for both doctors, dentists, and specialists, and also the allied professionals, that's been. That's not to say that people are fully happy with what they got. In many cases, you will find people are very happy with the additional money they got, but in some cases, they won't, because it's linked to the individual. And that's the key thing with the OSD. It's not a one-size-fits-all. It's not like a 5% across-the-board allocation. With respect to PMPCT and how we can decrease the rate from 3.5 to the 2.3 that KZN has had, let me say that the province with the worst PMCCT outcome at the moment is in Mpumalanga. So just around 5.8%. So that's the province that's worst. The province that's best is KZN, 2.3. And the next lot are Western Cape and Gauteng. So what we've done is together with the high-level UN meeting that was held in July, we have come up with new targets for PMCCT. So at 6 weeks post-delivery, we have set a target of 2%, less than 2% transmission rate. And at 18 months, we set a target of less than 5%. Now those targets will be in the new strategic plan for HIV and TB, which, you know, if there was time, I would take the committee to address. I think the Honourable Chair, that at some point, we would need to bring the committee on the new NSP for TB and HIV, which will be launched on the 1st of December. But we have an accelerated plan for the elimination of transmission from mothers to children between now and 2015. And we've developed plans for each province, with each province. So each province now has an elimination plan for the prevention of mother-to-child transmission, which is in line with the UN agreement that we have. And again, the CCG issue on stipends I've spoken to. The TB issue, which provinces have a bigger problem with TB? Honourable Member, TB is a problem everywhere in the country. This province, for example, has now a higher caseload than KwaZulu-Natal. For a long time, KZN had the higher caseload. Now this province has a higher caseload. However, what we are improving is both the treatment completion and the cure rates. What are we doing? We need to do this district by this reform, Chair, not just province by province. Because even within provinces, there are wide variations on the treatment success. So we're working with each province, and the team from the National Department is visiting each province. In fact, Honourable Chair, today they are in the Northwest, as it happens, to work with the top management of the Northwest to look at how to strengthen the program in the Northwest. Northwest, in particular around Krugersdorp and Rustenburg, there are big challenges. And I think the Honourable Member knows that. So we're working with the Northwest today as well. What we've also done is, as we said in our annual report, we have now an intensified case-finding program. And the idea there is to go to every one of the households of our index patient. And our index patient is patients already on treatment that we know of. So we'll go to the household, screen everyone for TB, offer everybody an HIV test, and then link them to treatment to a health facility should they need further investigation for TB and if they need a CD4 test for HIV. And to date, since February last year, we visited 100,000 households throughout the country. So intensified case finding, putting people on treatment as early as possible. One of the things we are finding, Honourable Chair, is that there's still a gap between diagnosing a patient as TB positive, spirit positive, and putting them on treatment. So that's firstly what we need to do, then ensuring the complete. And what we are hoping is that the primary healthcare ward-based outreach teams will be critical in linking the facilities with communities at a ward level, so that we will know that the community health worker with each of these catchment areas will know who's on TB treatment and will be able to follow them up. So that's the second mechanism to strengthen our TB program. What we do know, of course, is that the HIV epidemic is also driving the TB program, the TB problem. So we are accelerating putting HIV positive patients who don't have TB on INH prophylaxis to prevent them from getting TB. We have the biggest INH program in the world. Now, we're supposed to be putting around 600,000 HIV positive, TB negative patients on INH. At the moment, we are somewhere around 190,000-200,000. So we haven't reached our number yet. But it comes off a very low base. I might add that this province is lagging behind, basically, it's lagging behind because there were quite a few challenges in convincing many of the clinicians to start their patients on INH because they're worried about resistance and the inability to screen out TB and HIV positive patients. So, there was a workshop in this province last week with the clinicians to try and address their concerns on the clinical side. But one of the biggest solutions to the link between HIV and TB is to put all HIV positive patients on INH. You know, that's really how we will crack the TB HIV co-infection. Not happy with the progress with the DHS given the NHI. Honourable Member, I fully agree that we can and must do better on the DHS side. One of the key challenges, and the provinces will, many provinces don't have provincial legislation to implement the district health system in the way in which it's articulated in the National Health Act. This province, for example, has only recently, as I think 2 weeks ago, created legislation for the district health council. And one consequence of that is that they've not had district health plans. One of the questions was, why doesn't this province have a district health plan? It's only because they've not had district health council.
Yeah, okay, can I stop you there and ask members, don't you think we need to have a two-minute break? That's a two-minute break so that you can refresh and you can reorganize yourself the questions, who's going to go to which one, because now you are jumping from one question and you skip the others because you see them at that time. So we can arrange your questions. I'm not sure, would you agree with that? That's 2 minutes. I don't think there's, I'm not sure.